Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post, where we'll be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshaw, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at @YPSport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. And if you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
As mentioned earlier in the intro, this week we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshaw. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Hello.
Morning. Morning. So this week saw a number of our Yorkshire sides play in the FA Cup, which we will be covering more later on in this week's podcast. But first, we start in the Premier League, where Sheffield United claimed their first win of the season by claiming a late and nerve-wracking 2-1 victory over Wolverhampton Wanderers, thanks to Oliver Norwood slotting home the winning goal in the 10th minute of added time. Now, how crucial is it for Paul Heckingbottom's side to get that first victory, Stuart?
Oh, I think it was. I think it was really crucial. I mean, whether you agree with it or not, you know, the noise around his job prospects was really starting to get quite loud. You know, I've talked in previous podcasts about how long it took them to get their first win. Their last season, they were in the Premier League, and the damage that did. But of course, if this is just to be a one-off, then it's a fairly limited value. They've got, you know, we were talking for a long time about how this Wolves game was a big one on the horizon for them. Next up, they've got Brighton and Hove Albion. You know, obviously they've had a huge amount of plaudits the last 18 months, and rightly so. But as we speak now, they've only won one game out of their last eight, so it's not quite the fearsome prospect. You know, it might look at first glance, and then after the international break, they've got Burnley and Bournemouth, two games in that mini league that we've talked about. So it's really important that they, you know, they follow it up with some points from those three games. But yeah, the confidence it will have done them, the character they had to show, given that Wolves equalised in the 88th minute, the defensive strength they showed, which again, you know, it's something Leon's talked quite a few times about. It's been a bit of a concern. You know, they've been a bit flaky at times. Obviously, they've lost John Egan and Chris Basham and Anil Ahmed-Hosic recently. So it was important to tick that box. You know, a goal for Cameron Archer. It was a really good day for them. And say a real shot in the arm in terms of their confidence. But now they have to use that confidence to build something, because all of a sudden, you know, the league table looks a lot less daunting than it did. You know, they're level on points with Burnley. Luton are only a couple of points away. Bournemouth are obviously in there as well. There's something for them to fight for, which is what they needed.
Yeah, I just think I agree with what Stuart said. It's just huge psychologically, isn't it? And you can imagine, obviously, Burnley lost at home to Crystal Palace, and Bournemouth got a good hiding at Manchester City. I'd imagine the pain when they were both coming in the dressing room afterwards was compounded by, you know, seeing the result at Sheffield United. And he's just glad for everybody concerned with the club, and more especially Paul Heckingbottom. He's had to field, you know, and deal with a lot this season, hasn't he? You know, all manner of injury problems and the you know, pre-season which was pretty fraught and difficult. And I mean, pleased for the supporters. Obviously, it's great to see them, you know, win a game at Bramall Lane in front, you know, in front of their own supporters. I think it was something like, was it just before, I can't remember quite if this is right, but I think it is. I think it was it the Norwich game just before COVID? Was that the last, I think that was the last win, wasn't it, in front of their own spectators in the top flight? So, you know, that was, what, 2.5 years? Longer, wasn't it? 3.5 years ago. So, yeah, I just think everybody everybody, you know, needed it, and you know, a real, you know, a really important moment as well. I mean, I think it was, you know, this time a few years ago that, you know, Sheffield United hit Skid Row. That I think they lost about seven or eight on the trot, and obviously it was a season they didn't win the first game in the league until January. So they've got the monkey off the back in that regard. And you know, Stuart's right to talk about, you know, the defensive aspects as well. You know, they've got key players out, but seems to be the likes of, you know, Jack Robinson and Baldock and Trusty is showing some leadership and metal. So yeah, exactly what they needed. It, you know, ahead of, obviously got Brighton on Sunday, but you know, you just feel this is the sort of key spell in the season so far, isn't it? They've obviously got Burnley not too far down the line. And you know, they've got Luton, haven't they, over Christmas, and Bournemouth as well. So yeah, a real timely, you know, timely fillip. They've got the win. It didn't particularly matter how they got it.
Yeah, and Leo's right. It didn't matter at all how they got it. But as it turned out, they deserved it, really. I mean, you know, the first half was Wolves' half in terms of them having all the ball. But the way they defended, you know, Leon's right to mention those three players in particular who made up the back three, meant that there was very little work for Wes Fodringham to do. That I think there was only one really good chance all half, which actually was an absolute sitter that Ike Nouri missed. But other than that, Sheffield United kept them at arm's length, didn't offer anything really the other way. But the second half was a different story. You know, they came out with much more aggression. They dominated the half. They had lots of chances. So for them to concede an 88th-minute equaliser after Cameron Archer had scored, you know, that was a real morale blow. That was the sort of thing that could finish teams off. And from that position, you're more likely to lose a game than win it. So to see them come back, you know, to see Oliver Norwood score a pressure penalty, which, you know, obviously VAR's been the talker this week, the amount of time he was stood around in the pouring rain thinking about the enormity of the penalty kick he was probably about to take. That was a real pressure kick. And, you know, there are leaders missing for that Sheffield United team in terms of players that are injured. But Norwood, you know, has really stood up as captain. I was really impressed with Trusty at the back, in the way he, not just the way he defended, but the way he organised the players around him. And that's what it needs in this phase. You know, as I say, they're missing the likes of Egan and Basham. They're missing big personalities for the team. It needs other people to step up and take the responsibility. And that's what happened on Saturday. And that, you know, obviously the win was by far the most important thing, but sort of second on the list in terms of encouragement was the character and the leadership the players showed.
And now we turn our attention to the Championship and start with Leeds United, who claimed an impressive 1-0 victory over Leicester City. That win was their fourth win from their last five games and helped them strengthen their position in third place. How did you assess the game, and how should the team use this result as they head into their game at home against Plymouth Argyle, Leon?
I just think it's a statement victory. I mean, there's been a lot of noise and pats on the back, justifiably so, in the direction of Leicester. And, you know, we talk about psychological moments of the season with Sheffield United. That just seemed to be one, you know, for Leeds there. They've obviously gone to Ipswich earlier in the season, bit of a crazy game, and won 4-3. And, yeah, it was just a really top professional performance. We've spoken before, liking the spine of the Leeds team. You know, Rodon, Zampadu, Kamara had a you know, really good game as well. Root has been obviously had a lot of deserved bow case thrown in his direction. And yeah, I think it's just one of those. You know, the other teams at the top of the table with, you know, top two aspirations will have been thinking, you know, what a result. You know, that is, you know, it's obviously still a little bit of a gap, but Leeds, you know, they're the real deal for me in terms of automatic promotion candidates. There's obviously a long, long way to go, and you know, variables will come into the mix. We'll have to see how, you know, what transpires in January. But, you know, interesting as well in the regard that Ipswich have dropped 4 points, you know, obviously since Leeds won at Leicester. Obviously drew against Birmingham on on Saturday, and obviously we're pegged back right at the end against Rotherham in midweek, and I'm sure Leeds will have been, you know, grateful for that. But I just like that. It just seems to be everything is coming together quite nicely at Leeds. Touchwood, you know, a bit of a mix of the silk and steel. You've got the, you know, the flair of Somerville, who's having an outstanding time a bit of late. Well, there's chipping in Dan James, but we've got the, you know, the solidity at the back. You know, people rely on the road-ons of this world, and you know, quite a lot of the players are putting their hand up. You know, they've won five of the last six. You know, other teams as well. To be fair, you know, you're looking at Leeds and probably Southampton at the minute, who you would think would be, you know, can challenge the top two. And I think the other thing to say, that obviously an outstanding away win at Leicester, I'm liking the sort of consistency that they're showing at home at Elland Road. They're unbeaten yet so far in the league. You know, that was always going to be for me a bit of an issue. Obviously, the struggled at home, you know, in the previous two seasons, albeit against a lot stronger opposition, but there was a need earlier in the season to get their act together at home. They're doing that, and they've obviously got Plymouth on Saturday.
Yeah, I think Leon absolutely hit it on the head with the first words he used there, statement victory. You know, the way they were in Leicester's faces right from the start, you know, not intimidated by, you know, as Leon says, it's a team that has rightly had a lot of plaudits for the football they've played. They really took the game to them, really set their stall out early on. And yeah, they're just looking in a really good position. I mean, Daniel Farke has been asked a couple of times in press conferences about, you know, Leeds' position in the table. You know, is he concerned? Is he happy about the gap and all this sort of thing? I think from Leeds' perspective, just to be stalking the top two is fine at this stage of the season, because, you know, with Leeds' reputation, with Farke's reputation, So long as they're in touch, the teams above them will be constantly looking over their shoulder and just worried about what Leeds will do. And you know, so long as they're in the top three, or you know, even fourth or fifth, if the gap's quite small by Easter, you'd be quite happy. They just need to be in a position to pounce. You know, sort of the opposite of the way they fell away in that first season under Bielsa. But yeah, there will have been teams, with it being a Friday night game particularly, there will have been teams, you know, like Ipswich and Southampton and what have you, watching that game on Friday night thinking, crikey, you know, these are serious contenders for automatic promotion. And As we said about Sheffield United, it is just a psychological thing. Just continues that momentum, continues that belief that when it comes to crunch time, they can do something. And it makes it easier. You know, there's a lot of competition for places at Leeds United, and that can cause unhappiness, you know, if players aren't playing. But it's a lot harder to be unhappy when your team's just outplayed Leicester City without you. You don't have the same argument, so it just keeps the ship going along that bit more smoothly. And it was a great win for them.
You know, for Leeds, it's just a case of keeping the foot on the pedal. I actually had a bit of a busman's holiday, and I was at the Plymouth game last weekend, and they're a decent side, counter attacking going forward. They've got, you know, two or three really good players. Likes of Morgan, Whittaker, and I thought Finazad was excellent at number 10, Ballymumba. But I thought they said defensively they looked susceptible, and I would expect if Leeds are at full pelt, or something like full pelt, for them to be too strong for Plymouth. But yeah, I just think looking at Leeds at the top end of the table, there certainly are threats there in the likes of, you know, Ipswich, Southampton, and Leicester, of course. But they've really just got to just control what they can control themselves. They've got enough talent in there and wherewithal in the squad. And, you know, I think if Leeds don't achieve their aims this season, it'll be to do with Leeds rather than others, to be quite honest. You know, they've got enough in the building there, and if they just, you know, add one or two shrewd additions in January, you'd hope that they'll be fine. But of course, still a long way to go. But you know, really encouraging signs from Leeds under Farker, who's, you know, he's just showing why Leeds brought him in the summer. He's got an excellent track record in this division, and yeah, they can look back at their opening third of the season, you know, pretty happy about things, but sort of knowing and listening to Farker, the last thing he'll be is satisfied.
Yeah, yeah. And next we turn our attention to Rotherham United, who had to share the points in their 1-1 meeting against Queen's Park Rangers, which was followed by an impressive 2-2 draw when they welcomed Ipswich Town to the New York Stadium. With the Millers currently sitting 4 points away from safety, but the last two performances haven't been that bad. What does Matt Taylor have to do to get his side into a more comfortable position, Stuart?
Just get them more consistent. I've seen Rotherham 3 times at home this season, and everything I've seen has been totally out of kilter with their position in the league. Also, sort of the Hillsborough, and then they did look like a team should be in the relegation zone. But yeah, against Ipswich, it was a really good performance. You know, again, like we were talking about with Sheffield United before, key defenders missing and a really good defensive performance. You know, Ipswich top scorers in the division. They had three shots on target all night. Scored with two of them, plus one in stoppage time. And that was with Daniel Ayala playing his first start since May, since he was at Blackburn. And Hakim Adolphin, who we've come to know is an attacking central midfielder, playing centre back alongside him. It was a really disciplined performance. Again, like Sheffield United, you felt when Ipswich went 2-1 up in the 88th minute, you felt like this was such a massive psychological blow for Rotherham. But they came back. They scored a brilliant goal from Christie in stoppage time. To get an equaliser, and it was a really good performance. And I say, if you only watch that performance, or you know, I saw them beat Coventry, I saw them draw with Preston. If you only saw those games, you would think, well, how is this team possibly adrift in the relegation zone? It just makes no sense. But I think the problem is that a small squad with a lot of injuries, you know, reliant on a few players whose fitness record has been patchy. I mean, obviously, Ayala signed as a free agent this season with not much football behind him for the last 6 months. Sean Morrison signed as a free agent last season. Same problem, and has never really had the rhythm of games. Grant Hall falls into that category as well. I think they struggle quite badly with 3 game weeks. And they struggle with reproducing that form away from home, which is odd, really, because one of the things you would say about them, or certainly I would say about them, is that, you know, the better the opposition, the more they rise to it. And, you know, Matt Taylor was saying he thinks they play better against teams like Ipswich because there's less onus on them, on Rotherham, to attack. It sort of feeds into their underdog mentality and all this sort of thing. So you would think a team like that would quite relish playing away from home. But, you know, apart from the draw at Southampton, which was significant, apart from that, they've been really poor away from home. It's really undermined them. So they've got to get over that psychological hurdle, because the ability is there. You know, Sam Nombe scored his first goal for the club, which was, you know, important for him, having come as a club record signing and struggled to even get game time. Again, that was a tick in the psychological box, but it'll all be blown away if they go to Watford and put in another limp performance. So I say they need to build on the very good things that are there, and just get more consistency, I suppose, more than anything else. Because on a night like Tuesday, you wouldn't have said that there should be, you know, 4 points adrift of safety 15 games into the season.
I think not for the first time. I'd agree with what Stuart said there. But not the first time. It just seems to be a season that's going to well be defined by Rotherham's, you know, away statistics, or sort of, you know, lack of them, really. you know, in the previous three or four seasons, you know, it's a historic one. They really have struggled for victories away from home, and you know, they'll go to Watford this weekend, and I think it's just over the calendar year now, isn't it, since the one at Sheffield United. I mean, all the things that we associate and admire with Rotherham in the past, they've shown sporadically this season, certainly at home, you know, difficult to beat, not feeling sorry for themselves, you know, some power plays in aspects of the performances, and they've had a hell of a lot to contend with, haven't they? Obviously, the you know, one of the lowest budgets, if not the lowest budget in the division, along with probably Plymouth, and they've had a hell of a lot to contend with in terms of, you know, injuries and, you know, unavailability. So yeah, they're just managing to keep their heads above water and keep in touch with those above them. But you know, the next step is just marrying it together and just getting a bit more consistency, you know, on the road, because there's, you know, there's been too many, you know, for me so far this season, that, you know, the negative has been, you know, they've gone at places like Huddersfield. I did that game. They didn't compete at all. They got rolled over at Millwall. You know, they got heavily beaten at Stoke twice. Obviously, Stuart was at the Sheffield Wednesday game as well, where they never seemed to really lay a glove on Wednesday in a local derby. So, you know, as well as it's done in terms of the character aspects and you know, battling and chiselling away to get results, they've got to produce something away from home. I would say certainly, you know, a couple of times before the end of the year to really give that transfusion of belief going into the new year in January.
Yeah, I mean, they've got three of their next four away from home, and the home game is Leeds. I mean, I say, having seen how they played against Ipswich, they've nothing to fear from being at home to Leeds, but it's not a game you can bank on. So, you know, if Huddersfield, for example, were to get their act in order in that time, that gap could widen if they don't pull their finger out away from home. And I say that the ability is there. That's the frustrating thing. I think it must be. I say some of it is physical in reproducing, you know, their form three times in a week, but not all of these away games sort of fall into that category. I think a big chunk of it is between the ears, and it's something they need to address, because they're just not showing their best often enough. They certainly are showing it on you know, in big home games, but let's say QPR, you looked at as a, well, this is a great opportunity to get a win. There's, by all accounts, showed a lot of character that day, but nevertheless, they didn't win the game. It was a missed opportunity, and every missed opportunity at home just adds to the pressure away. Yeah. If they could just get that monkey off their back, it could do wonders for them. But you know, they can't keep they do keep talking about it. They have to do something about it.
Yeah,
I think that's why Saturday's important. I sort of look at a few of the away games down the track. They've got to go to Hull. They're difficult to beat at home, albeit they haven't won as many as they like, but they're a hard nut to crack at home. And they've got to go to Plymouth, and before Christmas, Plymouth are good at home, and I think they've got Leicester as well. So, yeah, it just feels like a big game for Rotherham on Saturday.
And now our focus turns to Bradford City, who have announced Graham Alexander as their new manager. What do you think we could expect from the new man in charge in terms of playing style, and how could he approach the team that he's sort of inherited from Mark Hughes, Leon?
I think, first of all, it's worth saying that I don't know what Stuart thinks, but I think it's, you know, a sensible, joined-up appointment, really. You know, he's someone with a track record of success in the lower divisions with to the likes of Fleetwood, and he obviously took Salford into the Football League, and he did a decent job in the circumstances at Scunthorpe. He's not a sexy name, if you like, Graham Alexander, but he's been around the block. He knows the circuit. He was a very well respected player in his, you know, for the likes of Preston and Burnley, you know, a pro's pro. So yeah, I think it's a solid appointment for me. And yeah, it's a bit ironic, isn't it? He was manager of the month in August, and then such is football, he'd lost his job a month and a half later. But you know, I think the fact that MK Dons want him to sort of, you know, commandeer them and hopefully get them straight back up, the first time of asking speaks a bit about his reputation. Now, and in terms of his style, he spoke well at his press conference. He just basically spoke about being adaptable first and foremost. I mean, he's been in a situation before where he's taken over a club in mid-season. I think he said he'd taken over one in March and December, and then I think he said one in January as well. So, being thrust into a club without a pre-season doesn't seem like it'll faze him. But if you look at what he's done at other clubs in terms of his tactical approach, he has been adaptable. He was saying that when he went to Motherwell, he looked at the players that he had there. I think he went there in the new year and they were in a relegation fight, and looked at the players he had and decided that the direct route would work for them, and that's how they got out of trouble in the end. He's also spoken about having a possession based game at Salford. So I think at the minute he'll have to quickly assess what balance he's got in the squad and getting the best out of it. And there were spells under Kevin McDonald, the players seemed infused by this front foot approach, getting more crosses into the box, a bit more higher tempo, which is a bit of a deviation away from the sort of possession based game they had under Mark Hughes. So that'll possibly be the way that Alexander goes with it. But he's obviously going to be he's conscious of the fact you've got to get results pretty quickly. The 16th in the table, the clock is starting to tick. Bradford won't have, they'll still have designs on hopefully getting in the top seven this season. So as much as it is about style aspects, the overriding concern is getting some early results.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. As Leon says, he's not the sexiest name you'll ever get. Well, this is League Two. This is the real world. This is mid season. A team in a bit of bother. You want someone who knows the division. You don't want philosophies. You don't want big names. Yeah. They went down the big name route last time. It didn't work. They went down the philosophy route really last time. It didn't work. You want someone who can look at a squad and say, this is the best way to play with this squad, because you can't change it until January. And even in January, there's a limit to what he can do. It's a case of, as Leon says, like Kevin McDonald did, just looking at that group of players and saying, how do I get the best out of them? And how do I get the best out of them to win matches in League Two? This guy knows about the level. He knows what's required. And Bradford fans just want to be in that playoff picture. If they play the most beautiful football Bradford City have ever seen, that's a bonus. But first and foremost, they do not want to be in League Two, because they look around at the crowds they get and the stature of the club, and they just see a club that's not punching its weight. And anyone who can get them punching their weight, whatever style of football they play, however they do it, that's what's needed in the circumstances. I mean, let's be honest, watching Phil Parkinson's Bradford wasn't like watching Brazil. But it was exciting. It was successful. It was something people bought into, and it's something Bradford fans would love to see again, sort of thing. And Graham Alexander just seems like a sensible guy who's got his head screwed on right. He's not going to get caught up in highfalutin ideas about doing this or doing that. He knows he's just got to get Bradford in there. Playoffs at minimum this season, and then take them from there. And as I say, how they do it really is neither here or there. He's got to re-energize that football club, because the gate for the FA Cup game at the weekend was alarming, just over 3,000. Obviously cup gates generally are much lower because isn't covered by season tickets, but that was a good indication of how disillusioned a lot of Bradford fans are at the moment. It just needs someone to re-energise them, really, and to say that that's about putting wins on the board. Hopefully Alexander is the man who can be parachuted into a situation like this, hit the ground running and do that.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a dangerous work talk about being encouraged with Bradford, but probably use it anyway. I mean, I've had a little look at the reaction. You gauge it on the message boards and on social media, and you know, refreshingly, there seems to be a fair amount of realism amongst the Bradford fans, saying, you know, sort of saying, look, it's a steady, solid appointment. Somebody who knows the division. All right, it's a name that hasn't got much stardust, but this just seems to be a realization that, you know, it's not about personalities and names for Bradford. It's about here and now. And you know, I think also from the Bradford hierarchy's respect, you look at Alexander. Is obviously he relatively recently out of work at MK Dons, and you know, you look at his record and what other clubs will probably at some point in the winter will be changing manager in the lower divisions. And he's, you know, he's a sort of pragmatic candidate that would interest other clubs, and you wouldn't really necessarily see him being out of work for too long. So, you know, I think there's that aspect. Bradford maybe nipped in before Alexander went elsewhere and, you know, made a success of it. So, yeah, I think it's a joined up appointment. We'll obviously have to wait and see how he fares. But, you know, I think the thing as well that he's coming to clubs before in mid season or part way through and took things on relatively quickly is important as well.
And next we turn our attention to the first round of the FA Cup, where a number of our teams took part. Was there anything that stood out for you during the first round, or was there a fixture that caught your eye in the second round draw, Stuart?
Yeah, I think there's a few second round ties which look potentially quite tasty. I mean, there's a lot of replays to be negotiated first, but you know, we've got the possibility. Well, we know that Harrogate are going to Bolton Wanderers. We've got the possibility of York versus Wigan and Scarborough Athletic versus Blackpool. If the Yorkshire teams can, or Scarborough Athletic at Blackpool, if the Yorkshire teams can get through their replays there, you know, three games against Lancashire opposition with Premier League history and FA Cup history, quite distant in the case of Bolton and Blackpool, but three games to really look forward to. I think it was, you know, it's good to read about David Stockdale coming back from injury in such impressive style for York, keeping a clean sheet there. I mean, they've missed him badly in the early stages of the season. So yeah, hopefully York can see off Chester in the replay and set up that game against Wigan. Obviously, a bit of a heartbreaker for Scarborough to concede in stoppage time to Forest Green in their first game in the FA Cup first round proper. But a really good game by the sound of it. You know, played in front of a sellout crowd. It's good to see the momentum behind that Phoenix club. We've got the possibility of Grant McCann taking Doncaster Rovers to Peterborough. That could be quite entertaining. Doncaster had a decent draw with Accrington Stanley, where by all accounts they gave a good account of themselves. So hopefully they can come through with that. And you know, disappointing for Barnsley to be held to a draw by Horsham, but that was one of those classic, you know, this is what the FA Cup's all about. And you know, the flip side was a really good goal for Fabio Gelo. Good to see him making a mark on senior football. I know he's a player that a lot of Barnsley players are very excited. Barnsley fans are very excited about, 17-year-old Portugal youth international. So yeah, nice to see him getting an opportunity, taking an opportunity, and hopefully Barnsley can get the job done in the replay. But yeah, quite a tantalising draw, I think, in terms of the potential for a lot of good games, but still quite some work to do to actually sew that up.
Yeah, I think there's some quite nice ties, isn't there? You know, if Scarborough did manage to come through and get Blackpool, you know, it'd be a nice seaside derby of sorts. I mean, you look at Barnsley, it is not a particularly eye-catching one to get past Horsham and get Sutton, but I'm sure one or two other groundhoppers who support Barnsley will be they'll be probably not too bothered about that if they end up getting Sutton and maybe ticking one off there. And yeah, I mean, partisanship aside, it would have been nice for Barnes to go through, obviously, but there was, you know, there's a Horsham aspect as well, and I know there was a lot of disappointment at their end that the game was on a Friday night, you know, somewhat controversially. See the police advice. So, you know, I think it'd be churlish not to be happy for them that they're going to get the moment in the sun at the home stadium next Tuesday on, I think it's on ITV4, isn't it, against Barnsley. So, yeah, there's a bit of romance there, although hopefully not too much romance, and Barnsley can get through.
Yeah, and Horsham, a reminder, of course, of why it's so important to protect FA Cup replays. Yeah. You know, they're obviously getting undermined and chipped away, and goodness knows how long they'll last beyond the third round stage. But yeah, really important that clubs like Horsham, you know, like Scarborough and other clubs like that get the opportunity to have these big replays and you know, just earn their place in the next round rather than, you know, the lottery of a penalty shootout.
Yeah.
I mean, it might not be the sort of most glamorous draw in the competition, the second round, but, you know, if you get your place in the hat, you know, with the big boys, there's a, you know, the excitement that can generate, and you can get a really big big fish in the third round. I know there's another argument talking about, you know, will the Premier League sides play the strongest teams? They probably won't, but when you're, you know, for a lower division side, going to a leading Premier League side or getting a home tie, it's a huge deal, isn't it? And obviously some welcome money as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the chance to watch York or Harrogate or Scarborough or whoever, you know, Old Trafford, Anfield, that's what it's about. It's not such a big deal if it, you know, York City fans don't say, oh well, you know, it was all right going to Old Trafford in the League Cup, you know, however many years ago it was, but Manchester United only played their reserves. York City fans say, we went to Old Trafford and we beat Manchester United, you know, full stop. That's what it's about. And as Leon says, second round is all about what could be next, really. But, you know, even that notwithstanding, for you know, clubs of the size of Harrogate and Scarborough to have the potential to play at Bolton and Blackpool, they're big second round ties in themselves. But it's the thought of what could be ahead. But I say there are a lot of replays to negotiate before we get to that. So hopefully we're able to talk about most, if not all, of those teams actually getting that opportunity.
Yeah, true. And now we turn to our final segment for this week's podcast, which is our team and player of the week. This time we're going to ask Leon for his team, for the team that caught his eye this week, and then we'll go to Stuart for his player of the week. So, Leon, which team has caught your eye this week?
Well, I was a little bit torn, to be quite honest. Obviously, huge, huge result for Sheffield United, you know, more so in the manner of it as well, with Wolves equalising at the end and there being a, you know, a welcome twist in the tail at the death. You know, massive result for everyone connected with the club, as we've spoken about, and the players, and, you know, more especially for me, for Paul Heggenbottom. I think he really deserved that. His, you know, his first Premier League win as permanent manager there. So, you know, hats off to him. But, you know, I just think the result that Leeds got at Leicester was, you know, really, you know, as we said, you know, a real showstopper and statement, and, you know, one that didn't just resonate, or won't just resonate at Elland Road, but, you know, across the upper echelons of the Championship, you know, arguably, you know, the standout result of the argument, say, for the season so far at that level. You know, Leicester had been, you know, the form had just been so remorseless, hasn't it? You know, look at the tally of points so far, and there's a lot of talk about, you know, already about getting, you know, record numbers of points this, that and the other, and talking about how much ahead of the in terms of points there were than Burnley at this stage of last season. And Burnley absolutely, you know, romped on with finished with a wet sail, didn't they? So it's got to be the Leeds United result there at Leicester. That's the one that I'll have to look for.
Yeah, and in terms of me for the player, again, it's nice to be spoilt for choice because there's been a few weeks this season where we've been scraping the barrel looking for positives. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the team of the week Leon picks online every week, there's plenty of good candidates there. You know, mentioned David Stockdale already. Mentioned Austin Trusty. I was really impressed with him in that game. You know, mentioned the sort of excitement around J-Lo at Barnsley. But again, I can't really go away from that Leeds United victory. And even within that, lots of candidates. You know, Crescencio Somerville's really having a really good start to the season, catching a lot of attention. Important goal for Jorginho Ruta, who's done a lot of good stuff apart from scoring goals, but it was vital for him to get that. But I think it's nice. It was nice to see TV pick Glenn Kamara as man of the match. You know, I think the way Leeds started the season, that central midfield partnership between Archie Gray and Ethan Ampadu looked pretty much unbreakable. But now Kamara has really wedged himself into that conversation, and you know he's not the glamour boy of that team. You know, I mentioned a couple of those already, but he's the sort of really, you know, dependable midfielder who just gives you so much, you know, going forward and in terms of winning the ball. It was a really, you know, when you play a passing team like Leicester, it's really important to win the midfield battle, and I thought Ampadu and Kamara did that. And I'd go for him as my player of the week. It was a really good performance from him.
I don't think there's too many arguments with that one. I would say a little mention in dispatches, not necessarily for an individual player, but I think Huddersfield's defence, they obviously got battered at, I don't know, Stuart was there, got battered at Elland Road and all over the place, and you just wondered, you know, what sort of next, really? I mean, in terms of the sort of lineup as well, the Watford game. So, you know, for Darren Moore to get the defensive unit together and for them to be pretty strong and get a good clean sheet against Watford was something that sort of caught my eye as well. You know, obviously not on spectacular levels to name them as a team of the week or any individual of the week, but I think in terms of a collective, that was pretty important.
And with their holding midfielder Jonathan Hogg suspended as well, you know, we talked about injuries with lots of teams that Huddersfield have had to combat them too. But yeah, I totally agree with Leon. It was a real big psychological test because I not only saw them get battered at Leeds, I saw them get battered by Cardiff a couple of days earlier, and it was really important they respond like that, and really heartening to see them dig out a clean sheet. Like we said with Rotherham, now it's a case of building some consistency because the teams down there, that's what they lack. That's why they are down there.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Stuart Rayner and Leon Wobschall, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com. Or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com. As ever, many thanks for listening, look after yourselves, and bye for now.